Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm really excited to introduce our guest for the day, Alex Jarbo. Alex is a specialist in the short-term rental space, which if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that that was my very first successful business. And I love the space so much and just really excited to hear all about what Alex is doing in it, in the space, because he's really crushing it. So Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So why don't you start us off, Alex, by just sharing a bit about how and why you got into real estate and then why short-term rental specifically?
Yeah. So back in 2015, I was in the Marine Corps, and I did four and a half years. I was mainly stationed in DC, but there had come a time where I just wanted to sort of just branch out and do my own thing, go to school and everything. So I turned to real estate, just reading a whole bunch of real estate books when I was still in the military. And I started seeing some stuff like on YouTube about short-term rentals and stuff. So at the time where like there wasn't really a huge space for this or any type of like mentors or teachers, I'd reached out to someone who was talking about short-term rentals on YouTube. And luckily he had reached out to me and we talked about like different markets and stuff. And he had actually helped me decide on moving to Asheville, which is where I currently live. And I moved here like the day I got out of the...
You moved to Asheville because of it was a good short-term rental market?
Yeah, good short-term rental market and good overall real estate market. I mean, I feel like it's been a seller's market since I moved here. But when I originally moved here, that was the original plan, was to get into short-term rentals. I originally got into management and then like the subleasing, master leasing model, where just leasing the property and then releasing it on Airbnb. But I moved here, finished my bachelor's, my master's, and then on the tail end of a doctorate right now, but I got my real estate license. And then I was just doing the real estate agent thing for about a couple of years. The first year I did for a full-time first year. And I didn't really enjoy it too much. And I was also helping people get short-term rentals while at the same time I was trying to get my own short-term rentals. So at the time I didn't really have too much money. And when it came to outside of the subleasing model, I wanted to actually own the property. And then when I just started looking, there was like nothing in my price range. And then anything that I would see that would do well as a short-term rental, I was just getting outbidded like crazy even back then. So my very first investment real estate project was, or my very first real estate investment was like a new construction development. So we developed our first cabin, 900 square foot A-frame that has absolutely been killing it for the last 3.5 years. And one turned into two turned into four. And then like I said, we're developing about, I think 17, either purchasing or developing 17 right now this year alone. And hopefully we can double that next year. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool. And I just love the story there, right? Like you knew you wanted to get into short-term rentals, but then it wasn't really a favorable market to do that. And yet the short-term rental market was really strong, but you just really stuck to your analyses and went, this doesn't make sense. And then you found another way, you know, development. So I think that's really great. What was it that attracted you to short-term rentals in the first place, as opposed to some other space in multifamily?
I was seeing the cash flow. So reading the different real estate books I was reading on single family and flipping, I was always a fan of just like, not just passive income, but something that was reoccurring income compared to like flipping a property where it was just like an instant buck and then you move on to the next project. But I realized about like flipping as well is you can take about 4 to 6 months on a renovation project, and it takes about 6 to 9 months to actually new construction from ground up develop. So to me, it was like either go out and find a project that is sort of doable and you can rehab it and it could be maybe 80% of what I wanted, but I wanted the unique properties. And that strategy has just helped us so much ever, even after COVID, like we were in the middle of COVID, we were completely rented out during the lockdown. 95% occupancy plus, to the point where we had to raise our rates during COVID. But yeah.
Let's just talk about that for a sec, because I think that's really interesting. This unique property that, you know, obviously when people are going on vacation or looking at Airbnbs, they're looking for a really charming experience often. And that's something they might be willing to pay a premium for. And so did you just have a sense of that? Or how did you decide to be like, you know, I'm going to go and I'm going to develop these A-frame properties?
I did have a sense of it because when I kept getting outbidded, it was on properties that were just normal. They were just normal houses, like say like a family would live in. And that's completely fine. But I'm a firm believer that outside of the city that you're investing in, I think the property in itself should be an experience. And I think the unique properties with the A-frames, log cabins, tree houses are very popular right now as well. Barn style type houses.
Yeah,
I just had a feeling that's where the market was going to shift to. And then also where it's continuing to shift to is one of the reasons why people are stepping away from hotels or stepping away from like just the general looking cookie cutter hotel is because they want an experience is what I see. And that has helped us so much in the last couple of years. Thesis, quote unquote, has played out in the last couple of years and then it continues to play out.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. We were talking a little bit before the show. You went outside of city limits because there's short-term regulations within Asheville. So in order to get around that, you know, you just go outside the city. Is that correct?
Yeah. And like we were also talking about, it's like, it's different everywhere, but investing in the more rural areas sort of helped us again with COVID because people stepped away from the metro cities a little bit during COVID, during the lockdown. And yeah, it's in the rural area. It just, with me plopping down the amount of money that we're plopping down and then also like take our own investor capital now, it made more sense just to do it legally. Like some cities have their rules and don't enforce them, but I just didn't want to take that risk.
Yeah. And you never know when they're going to start enforcing them, right? Like it was like that in court.
Yeah, right. All it takes is one neighbor complaint, even if you weren't doing anything wrong for them, for you to be on like the city's radar. So
yeah, for sure. Yes, we had that in Portland where we had the rules with Airbnb. We were one of the first cities to make rules with Airbnb, but then they weren't enforced for like another 6 years or something. And in that time, you know, a lot of people were not following those rules that had been set out. And so it's always a risk, right? And so if you're treating this like a business, which you are, which you want to protect against potential challenges, et cetera, then yeah, being very aware of short-term rental regulations is just the smart thing to do. You kind of have to do it if you want to treat it like a real business. So, okay, so you went outside the city limits. And then can you just give me an idea of like development costs and how you brought investors on and made it a win-win for you and them?
Yes. The first project I did was just money that I had saved up. But probably a year and a half after, once we built our first couple ones, I was sort of...
And just real quick on that, Alex, can you just give me an idea of like, well, what was the development cost for that 900 square foot?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, the development costs out here in the mountains do cost more because foundation costs and everything and just labor, what I found is just more expensive out here. But for all in all, if you include the land cost as well, it was about $240,000 to build that first one, completely furnished, decks, everything completely furnished, top to bottom, $240,000. And that cabin is throwing off consistently about $80,000 revenue a year, and then netting about $52,000 is what it did. It netted last year. And I don't have an investor with that one, which is crazy. And then that doesn't even include the equity that was created because the loan for the property was about $180,000.
Yeah, that's amazing.
At the time. Yeah. And we just did a cash out refinance and it appraised for like $350,000. So that's not including the equity that was created and everything. But I mean, if you just look at the raw numbers with the cap rates and the cash on cash ROIs,
yeah.
I mean, my ROI was like over 100% a year, which is ridiculous because I did get a construction loan for that. When it comes to the investor stuff, when I first started, I was just doing a plain 50-50 deal. The investors were helping me guarantee the loan because I just was completely capped out on how many loans I could get. Especially, I didn't want to wait like the couple of years for it to be on my taxes and blah, 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 like the way it is now.
And was it 50 in terms of capital contribution too?
No, it was capital contribution. I do all the work and take no management fee. That was my first couple joint ventures that I did like that. And now that I've built my net worth and built my reputation a little bit, it's similar to that, but I too take like acquisition fees, development fees, management fees. They're minimal, maybe like a 1% development fee and a 1% acquisition fee with a 3% management fee. Just that management fee goes directly into the person that I hired to help with the messaging, the automated, like the messaging of the property. And then the rest of the stuff, like...
Yeah, 1% development fee is like a steal.
Yeah, 3%. I mean, if you're going to go into any type of short-term rental market and purchase a property, you're going to pay anywhere between 20 to 30%, closer to 30% for a good manager. So, I mean, it was 50-50. And then I was obviously a 50% equity owner in the property and then 50% of the cash flow as well. So, I mean, it was a good deal all around to the investors.
Wait, is that after expenses or?
Yeah, after. So, I mean, the management fee is taken from the top, but 50-50 of the cash flow after all expenses are paid.
Okay. And the management fee was?
Completely different to, like, right now we're putting together a fund for syndication. Completely different model there. I don't even have the exact numbers there. It's not going to be as, I wish it could be as lucrative as that, but those onesies and twosie deals take, like, building one or two cabins at a time take a very, very long time. So.
I see. So with the syndication, you're building, you said, is that where you're building like the 17 or is that something?
So those 17 are actually scattered. So I'm still open to doing the joint venture stuff with people when it comes to, I like to do like 4 to 6 cabins at a time. It's just the best use of my time. When it comes to the syndication stuff, I'm putting together like a micro resort community of 40 to 50 cabins. Those are the bigger developments. The nice thing about the mountains though is like, about an hour and a half away from me, there's about 6 to 7 markets that are all their own short-term rental markets that could all have those micro resorts where I could have like a, say like a regional manager take care of all those, like a boots on the ground person. But right now I'm just focused on Asheville. So
yeah. Okay. So then just so I was clear, so you were doing a 50-50 equity cash flow split, and then that was after a development fee, an acquisition fee, and an annual management fee. Is that right?
Yeah. Acquisition and development. Acquisition is if we're purchasing with like a property that already has, like there's already a property with some land developed. I don't charge both of them. So like, I just do a 1% flat development fee if we're actually building. If we're purchasing a property, which we were talking about before we started, is a little bit rare for me to purchase a property. It has to be the perfect property. And then it's just a 1% acquisition fee. That's just built into the equity that I raise.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, lux-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Okay, very cool. So I just have some more questions about, you know, what you've decided is kind of like optimal for these A-frame cabins. Like, how many people are you trying to sleep and what kind of amenities are you providing, do you like think is profitable to provide?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's all different anywhere. So my favorite thing to do, and this is one of the first short-term rental masterminds I ever joined, who I'm actually a coach for now, of a super part-time coach for. He just recommends, the mastermind had recommended, just putting out like in terms of amenities, just like a cheap but good bottle of wine, maybe $5 to $7. I get mine from Trader Joe's here. I'll just go out and purchase 30, 40 bottles of wine and just put them in the properties. That always goes over phenomenally. We have 2 wine glasses on a little server on the dining table. Recently, I saw one of the coaches in that mastermind do something called Puppies and Pancakes, which is a phenomenal idea, where she puts out one of those Bisquick, like ready pancake mixes out at the property. And she names, so instead of doing a bottle of wine, she does like the pancake mix. But amenities, hot tubs are huge. So like when I think of a cabin, I think cabin, mountain views, and a hot tub. That's probably the biggest thing when it comes to amenities. Yeah, people filter their properties based off hot tubs here. So it's like the people want the hot tub. Hot tubs got a little expensive during COVID, but we found like a direct distributor to purchase from, which has been
hot tubs, mountain view, and what was the other
cabin.
One?
So like A-frame, log cabin, anything.
Okay.
That's what you think of, like, yeah. And then for the smaller amenities.
And then wait, so wine, and then did you say Bisquick, like so they could make cornbread or something?
Pancakes,
or?
Just like a, pancake. It's a pancake mix.
Yeah, okay.
And the property, like the title of the property is called Puppies and Pancakes, and there's obviously no pet fee, but I don't know why that's like the hook. Like when you think of like email marketing or marketing, that's like the hook. For some reason, that title does so well. Anyone's welcome to steal it if they're not in my market.
Well, not in different markets. So if I steal it, I won't feel too bad. No.
Yeah, yeah. But that, and then also just simple stuff on the amenities. So like just water bottles, popcorn, just simple stuff.
And what about beds and stuff? Like, are you trying to sleep more than 2 or?
Yeah. So our 900 square foot has a loft space that can fit a queen. And then there's a bedroom queen. And then if there's room for it, I don't try to pack people into a property.
Yeah.
But if there's room for it, I will do like a queen sleeper sofa as well.
Okay.
which this one did. It's a very open floor plan where, so that cabin can sleep six people.
Okay. And then is the loft, is it like closed off? So, or is it open to, so can you hear?
It's open. I love that. That's one of my big things is even in the small houses, I love how having like an indoor balcony where people can actually look down from the loft. That for some reason, like I love the concept or the design, the interior design of like when you first walk in the property, you can see all the way up to the top of the property, which I love. And one of the cabins that we just built, the model was, the floor plan was the same. It's like when you first walk in, you can see there's a loft, but you can see all the way up to the top. It's just welcome. It has like a feeling of like welcome and openness and stuff.
Yeah. What do you think about like, I mean, because I agree that visually it's very inviting, but then there's like the practicality of wanting to be able to close a door for when you're sleeping. So that, do you think that's not
a big— I've seen a couple A-frame floor plans that have like, it's weird. It has like the door there, like when you first come up and then there's the door and then it's blocked off. We've never had guests complain about it. At least I think we're at like 200 plus reviews at this point. I've never had a complaint about a guest about that. That's the first time someone's actually mentioned it. But yeah, I don't see it being an issue. And maybe it plays into just the people who actually book the property. Maybe there are people who are booking, who aren't booking the property that are like, okay, there's no door upstairs, but yeah, there's no door. You just walk upstairs and then boom, you're in the loft. So
yeah, totally. No, I just thought I'd see, and clearly it hasn't been an issue, and maybe people are self-selecting.
Absolutely.
Or maybe it's just part of the vacation experience or something. Okay, cool. Well, and so now tell me like where you see this going. So you were doing these onesies, twosies, but now you're focused on this like this like 40 to 50 cabin resort, right? Like that's a completely different project. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, like the best use of my time is what I realized. Like to me, there was no difference between looking at a 4-acre parcel and a 50-acre parcel. Maybe I had to walk the 50-acre one a little more, but in terms of sending over stuff to my architect, engineer, and my GC, for the most part, it was about the same amount of work on my end. And that's why I sort of decided to shift to that. It doesn't mean that I'm not open to doing the smaller projects. I still am. But in terms of for a project that big, anything over six cabins in the county, you need to stand in front of the board. And essentially, you can either represent yourself or hire an attorney. I just represent myself. You need to get like a specific permit. And for me, there's no difference in the permit between 6 and 50, depending on what land use zoning area you're in. And yeah, that's the reason I decided to shift towards the 40 to 50. And when I realized the systems, again, were the same, like to me, it's just hiring more virtual assistants to handle the messaging side. And then when it comes to the automated messaging, that's no extra work besides plugging in the addresses and the information into the systems. So the micro resort community has always just been, they've been around forever, these log cabin court communities. But I figured I would love to do like an A-frame or like a treehouse community, like 40 to 50 cabins. And I just feel like that would be phenomenal, especially if they're priced just a little bit, like just if you price them out, just be just adding a little bit more of a premium to the actual rate compared to a hotel. I feel like people are going to book that over a hotel all day. And like 50 cabins is not that big compared to like a 200-300 room hotel, like a normal Marriott or something, which are all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. And then do you feel like, is there like a place for people to store gear? I'm just thinking about these cabins, like since there's no garage, like just from a practical standpoint, if people are doing like outdoor activities and bringing their bikes and stuff, just curious if you have to accommodate.
Yeah, not necessarily a storage area. I haven't really thought about that. Some of the larger cabins, like the one that we just purchased, has like a really big, I mean, it's almost a bedroom, but just a big walk-in closet that I didn't want to take away from the guests because I think of like, outside of gear, more like luggage, just I don't want like, if the property can sleep 12 people, like that's 12 sets of luggage. So it's like, there has to be a place to be able to store that luggage on top of the other walk-in closets or the closets. Yeah, I haven't really thought about the gear thing too much. Maybe that's not the type of guest that I was looking to bring on, but a lot of like the market here is more of, it's breweries. We have over 100 breweries here and then hiking, not too much like gear and stuff. And then if they're going to kayak or anything, they're probably going to rent their kayaks. We can probably put in our guidebooks, like where they can rent them from and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, everyone has like, there's a different avatar for everything. So clearly you've honed in on like a particular customer avatar. Okay. So when you're doing projections for, let's say it's just like one of the, you know, one cabin and, you know, you say, okay, it'll basically be a 50-50 split after these few minor fees. Are the investors like, are you able to say like, well, I think you're going to get X amount of return on your capital?
Yeah, it's definitely a range. And then obviously I can show what the cash flow can look like. And the way I do that is, I mean, there's a couple tools out there that are open specifically for short-term rentals now. One of them is AirDNA.co is a really good tool to just analyze properties. You can literally look at all the properties in your market and get an idea of what your property could rent for. And the most recent one I started using was data.rabu.com or just Rabu. That's a free tool. It's essentially an MLS for short-term rentals,
really?
Where they pull the information directly from Airbnb, VRBO, and booking.com.
Wow. Okay. What was that?
data.rabu.com.
Okay. Yeah, that's fascinating. And definitely something that I want to check out, especially, yeah, just to see how they're doing it. Cause that projection part, to me, it feels somewhat variable, you know, because it is somewhat dependent on the economy. Like no one knew exactly what was going to happen in COVID. It turns out Airbnbs in rural areas were really, really hot, but you know, no one really knew that was coming. So that boom was hard to predict. And then by the same token, like the more challenging market conditions in the urban centers was probably not predicted with like, you know, no events and whatnot. Obviously we're not exactly in the pandemic anymore, although probably we're not out of it yet entirely in terms of demand in urban centers.
Right. It's just not the lockdown, right?
Yeah. It's not the intense lockdown, but we don't quite have still as many sports games and conferences and stuff. And
right.
So how do you budget that into your projections or like taking into account, you know, AirDNA and what they're saying versus just the uncertainty in the marketplace?
In the last couple of years, have been a really good gauge on what your property can potentially rent for, because there is historical data that existed prior to the pandemic. So you can compare those two numbers to see, okay, where were the occupancies at? And again, those are very general numbers. Like you're pulling all the properties together, like you said, but you can look at, like when I first came to this market, I was just interested to see what the property values did in 2008 and 2009. And in this market, they didn't really dip the way they did. I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan, and Detroit was wrecked by the recession. And so to answer that question, I would just look at, because AirDNA can show historical, I forgot when they actually started, but it was definitely before 2017. So you can compare 2017, 18, 19, and then what happened in 20 and 21. And then you can, based off that, you can play with your numbers to see where you would be at and then what the rental rates are.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely an interesting analysis, right? Because there's also so many changing factors like number of people using Airbnbs, number of Airbnbs on the market, but you know, it's a benchmark.
It's a moving target. You're 100% right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and because now people might be doing more international travel, whereas like over the last 2 years, maybe they weren't doing that as much. And so it is moving.
Yeah. And it's the opposite to the recession. But then with rising, I've thought about this stuff too. And it's like with the rising interest rates and everything, it's like, are people going to take that international trip after COVID, or are they going to take the smaller trip with like the road trip? So
totally.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah. So that's the stuff I think about is like during the recession, people stopped taking the $5,000-$10,000 trip internationally and they just traveled domestically. But now we're going sort of into a recession, but at the same time, people were prevented from traveling internationally. So it's going to be interesting how that plays out. If people actually, once we go through this market correction, if people are actually going to travel internationally or if we're going to stay domestically. So that's the magic question.
Yeah, for sure. So, but you're kind of just like, how do you feel like you're doing your projections to keep it up, like to keep it conservative? Are you just looking at kind of the last 5 years on AirDNA and saying like, well, you know, this is the average. I feel good about this. Are you going below the average or?
Yeah. So when I show my investors the projections, there's a break-even occupancy there. So like the break-even occupancy is anywhere between 33 to 40. It hasn't gone over 40%. So 33 to 40%. That number usually makes them feel really good. And it's a very important, it makes me feel good. It's a really good number that I gauge off of just to, okay, the property, we're not in a seasonal market here. This market rents year round. That's why it's important to sort of play into the uniqueness of the properties, because during the winter, people are not going outside. They're staying in the property. And that's why it's important for the property to be unique, because it also helps in the winter. But sorry, I completely just blew past your original question.
Oh, yeah. No, it's okay. I mean, I was just asking about break-even occupancy. And then I had another, you mentioned break-even occupancy as like something that makes you feel good about. And then I guess I just have a follow-up to that. And you kind of alluded to it, which is dynamic pricing. So, you know, just like airlines, we can change our prices every day or multiple times a day based on demand, et cetera. And so that 33% occupancy, is that based on like an economic occupancy, or is that based on, or do you not change the price per night for your
No, we have a dynamic pricing tool. We use PriceLabs, yeah. And you can also use Beyond Pricing. On that side, that helps. But I don't ever see my property dropping to that 40% number with occupancy-wise. I like to underwrite my properties at like an 80% okay. occupancy, 85% occupancy. I haven't been below 90% in the last couple of years, even with raising our rates. But between showing the best number I show in my projections is the 85% occupancy, and then the worst number I show is the break-even occupancy. So that maybe a five.
Okay. But I guess my question is, like, with that 85% occupancy or the 33% occupancy or whatever it is, then what nightly price are you using, since the price is changing every night?
Yeah. So I'll usually, depending on obviously what the property looks like, I'll put a floor to the price. Like usually, and I've seen this, it's happened personally with me, and I've seen it happen with friends who have booked through Airbnb. You never want, and this is just a general rule of thumb that I've just developed with talking to so many of the students who are in the mastermind too, is you never want your daily rate to drop below what your one day, your cleaning fee is. That sort of pisses people off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They'll see like, okay, your property is being rented out for $200, but your cleaning fee is $250. That's going to piss them off. So when it comes to figuring out what the floor to my average daily rate is, I don't like to drop below what the one day cleaning fee is. And then I don't set a ceiling to my pricing either. But I like to take, I look at AirDNA, I look at Rabu, and I average it. It's just an average daily rate. I don't really look at the seasonality of it too much. So it's like average throughout the whole year, this property can make $250 a day, and then multiply that by 365 and then add your occupancy in. That's pretty simple. Like that's usually what I do. It's panned out so far. So,
okay. Yeah. So when you say 250, that would be like the average price that it's rented for when it is rented.
Yeah, absolutely. And then like for us, honestly, summer is very busy here, but we have leaf season, like foliage season, where everything's like double or even triple.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where that 250 number comes in. It's just averaged because obviously February and March are going to be the slower months. So we know that it's just averaged.
For sure. Okay. Well, really interesting stuff. We've been chatting for a while. Thanks for getting into the weeds with me there as a short-term rental operator. I'm just was very curious. So appreciate you sharing those details. And would you now, Alex, share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and your firm and anything else you want to share?
Yeah. LinkedIn's honestly the quickest way to do it. They can also check out my website, which is Sargon Investments, S-A-R-G-O-N Investments with an S.com. Putting together a course as well. We have a wait list for that. I don't know, honestly, probably like 3 or 4 months until that'll be done, just because I realized there aren't, when I first started looking, there weren't too many real estate development mentors or even short-term rental managers or mentors out there. So it's not necessarily a mentorship. It's just going to be a course on people who are looking to do the development side of it and just talk about like design considerations. But if they're also looking to, people are looking to invest, I have an investor portal on the website as well.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I hope you take some time to check out Alex and what he's got going on. Everyone, listeners, thank you so much for coming. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com. For tons of free educational content to further your success.